Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au. And now, the human condition.
Yes, in our weekly human condition segment tonight, we begin an entirely new range of topics after our in-depth look at the fruits of the Spirit. And it's probably apt that tonight, as we've been commemorating September 11, and we continue to do so shortly, the day many say changed the world forever, that we begin looking at change, the challenge of change, how we can approach it, how to deal with it, even how to flourish in the midst of it. Our world is in so many ways going through such change today. Yet one thing remains the same. Clinical psychologist Lynn Worsley navigates our human condition for us here on Open House. Lynn, welcome again.
Thanks, Lee.
It's great to have you with us, as always. Now, this may be, I think, one of our most significant topics that we'll be looking at, because who doesn't experience change, often big change in their lives?
Yes, and, you know, one of the reasons I want to concentrate on change is because it is a guarantee. It's a guarantee,
yes,
in life.
Yeah.
But we all resist it, and we feel uncomfortable with change. But generally, when something changes, we actually have to face a threat of removing our routines. We have to face a threat of our masks being dropped, our patterns of behaviour that we've adopted to make us feel comfortable. All of that happens when change occurs.
Yes.
And so we get uncomfortable. So when we get comfortable, we like to make it so that we don't feel threatened and we can feel safe and secure. Now, that's interesting, because when something changes and we don't feel safe, we resist it. But there's a deeper reason behind that. It's not just because we want our patterns to stay the same. The reason that we resist change goes to the very core of us as people. And that very core of us has many, many fears. And one of the most dominant fears is our shame.
In
the very core of us, yes.
Yeah.
And the shame is that we're not good enough. Or the shame is that others may not like who we are and what we've done and who we actually are. And our shame is that maybe that we're not really who we think we are. And that shame's exacerbated when we've got bad experience that we can't resolve. And that usually involves relationships or significant people that have been in our past. So in response to this fear of exposing our shame, we put up walls, we have patterns of behaviour which prevent us from seeing our weaknesses or our vulnerabilities or exposing any of that to anyone. And that can be masks or little obsessions or routines or clothing or work or any ways we like to control our lives.
So our fears, and especially our fear of shame, lie behind why change is sometimes so difficult.
Yes.
Or so threatening, at least.
Yes, yes.
So what happens when there are these changes, these patterns disturbed, and we don't feel that security anymore?
Yeah.
What happens to us in change?
Well, what happens to us is that we're vulnerable. We become very vulnerable and we become open, and makes it very possible that others see our failure or our weaknesses, and it's a hard place to be. But it is in that place that we are most able to change in ourselves and actually make our own personal growth. It's not possible to grow personally unless we face change and vulnerability.
Okay.
So it's in the place of vulnerability that the deepest of relationships can occur, and that's where we crave the deep relationships. We want people to get really close to that point. But change is a really powerful process. It can be really painful. And that's why in my own psychology practice, I have a room that's called the change room. And that room's playful and it's stimulating and it evokes thinking outside the square and it helps people to embrace a change in creative ways. I've used the change room with people of all ages, even though it looks like a kid's room. And most people find it very uncomfortable.
Yeah,
but
that's interesting. Yeah.
Really helpful in getting them unstuck. Most people love using the change room.
But they need to go to a different physical place, or a different physical place will help them,
yes,
in coping with that change.
And sometimes back to a childlike state. So when you sit down in a beanbag like a teenager, or sit in a funny, colourful chair that looks like a hand, and it makes you feel like a kid and you start thinking again.
I can imagine. So many people say, I haven't been in one of these since the 70s,
yes,
which they probably hadn't. What changes then do you see people, say in the change room, having difficulty with, or just in life generally?
Yeah, we see a lot of people having changes in life stages, and we call that transitional changes where, you know, you go from one stage to the other. So children go through various changes or transitions, you know, from different schools or different primary schools to high schools and so on. But adults are usually associated with the job changes or their family structures changing.
Yep.
And these usually, when you've got changes in your life stages, they trigger feelings of abandonment because you're leaving people to go into a different place, or and you lose people who you're close to. Another change is like changes in your workplace or your procedures, like restructuring and rehiring and renewing contracts and negotiating employment conditions and all that sort of stuff. Now, these changes trigger the "I'm not good enough" shame. And I haven't done a good enough job for you.
Like taking on Open House 5 months ago. I know that feeling. That was a change, lovely change.
Yes.
Lovely change.
And what great growth you've had there,
yes, mate. I have. And I'm sure it's been good for me.
Yes.
It has, yeah.
Another one is changes in our religious practices. Now, we see this a lot in our churches. You know, music changes, traditions and routines and building structures and all of that sort of stuff really disturbs people. But part of these changes in this instance, they trigger the fear of losing the memory of meaningful spiritual connections that you've had in the past. And that may have helped growth, but that's a fear of losing those memories and the practices which link to the deeper meaning for those people.
When you say that kind of thing, I wonder, is it a reality that the older you get, the more resistant you get to change, or the harder you find it coping with change?
I think in a religious settings, in those contexts, I actually think that the older you get, the more memories you have. And so therefore, you hear an old hymn and it evokes a beautiful memory for you.
Yes.
You hear an old chorus out of the Sankeys, you know, it triggers a great time for you. You hear a Bible verse said in a certain way, it gives you a great memory, and you go back to when you first learnt it. Mm. So it goes to a very deep spiritual core.
Yeah. What about changes in relationships then?
Oh, now, changes in relationships is a very hard one. When there's disagreements with friends or parents or siblings, or separation of a long-term relationship, this triggers the really deep core of shame. Because deep friends or long-term relationships are people who've actually got to know you very, very well. And if they turn their back on you and decide not to like you anymore, that deep shame is that I'm really not good enough. That's really hard to face.
Yes.
And people shut down from that.
Because they're already probably coping with a fair bit of stuff knowing you and liking you or being alongside you despite that.
Yes, yes. And that's a very difficult one, a very hard one to cope with. Yeah. Another one is changes in personal growth. You know, when we've got situations of change, we're exposing our vulnerabilities, we have to face our shame. And in that place, oftentimes we manage to grow and understand ourselves. So we change. And it's in that process of intense personal growth. And that can have a dramatic effect on who we are and how we see ourselves and also how other people see us.
Yeah.
So it's a bit like being transformed.
So I'm one of these people moving through these various phases of change in life, workplace, religious practices, relationships, personal growth. What are going to be some of my reactions to those changes?
Okay, Lee, I'm going to tell you a little story.
Thank you, Lynn.
And the story is about four little mice.
Okay, good.
Who, and this is out of a book called Who Moved My Cheese? Great book.
Yep.
And it's four little mice, and these four little mice are called Sniff, Scurry, Hem and Haw.
I've never heard of these.
No? Ham and Haw. Okay. Maybe it's Hem and Haw anyway. But Sniff and Scurry are two little mice who head off into this maze looking for cheese. And off they go. They sniff and they scurry and they run around and they find cheese all the way and they go really fast and they get their cheese. And every time they find a new cheese, they get excited and off they go.
Mm-hmm.
Hem and Haw, they head off and they put on their joggers and they go looking for cheese. And they find the cheese in the first aisle. And they sit down and they take their joggers off and they sit there and they eat all the cheese. And next day, they don't worry about their joggers. They just come back to the same place in the same aisle. And they eat their cheese. And the next day, they do the same. And then after a while, Hem and Haw notice that the cheese is getting littler and smaller and there's not as much there for them. And the crumbs are getting a bit old. So they just notice that maybe they should start looking for some more. But Hem says, "No, I don't really want to go anymore. I just like it here." And says, "Who's moved the cheese?"
I get you. Yeah.
Haw goes, "No, actually, I think I need to go. I think I need to look for some more cheese." And he stands there at the door going, you know what, Hem, you're getting thinner and we need to look for more cheese. And Hem says, no, 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 the cheese will come back. If we just wait here long enough, it'll come back.
Don't like change.
Doesn't like change.
Yeah.
If it was like Sniff and Scurry, they would have gone on and not had to worry. Always had fresh cheese, always looking for new. So Hor has to leave his little friend sitting there waiting and go off looking for cheese. But the key to that is that as he goes, he gets excited because he sees crumbs on the way. He puts it in his pocket and he notices that looking for cheese is much more exciting than finding it.
Even if it's a bit scary.
Even if it's a bit scary.
Or we're being a bit vulnerable. So is that how we should embrace change, go out and kind of take it on?
Well, you need to know your style of change. We've all got memories. We've all got ways that we've had to cope with change. We've all got hurts because we're worried. And so what happens is that there's a style that we develop. And sometimes the style looks at denying that there's change occurring or resisting and blocking and, you know, putting up roadblocks as many as we can. Or we become pushy and impulsive. And that's a bit like Sniff and Scurry. They might be doing that.
Yeah.
Or we can be considered, which a bit like Hor. What he does is he just waited, he noticed, he looked. It took a little while to make change. But that's part of our personalities. But it's also really important that we understand what our first line of reaction is. And oftentimes it's how we feel about ourselves. If we are more secure in ourselves and comfortable with exposing the vulnerable selves that we are, we're more able to cope with change.
Yeah, I can understand that. So what are the factors that are going to help us to change beyond ourselves then?
Relationships.
Okay.
So the more that you have relationships where there's connectedness, where we've got people in our lives who care and are concerned with us, the more likely are that we are to be able to cope with change. We can talk to them, we can see people, and they can actually tell us what they think. We expose our shame to them, but they also see our weaknesses, but they're able to step in and not judge us for that. So the more deep relationships that we have, the better.
They're the kind of friends you need.
Yeah. If you avoid change, it's associated with the fear of exposing our shame. And so the more we're in deep and meaningful relationships where we're challenged but reaffirmed, the more likely we're able to see change as opportunities for further growth rather than threats to exposing our fear.
I reckon humility's going to have one significant part in helping us through the change kind of process.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
A proper view, appropriate view of ourselves.
Yes. Yes. So how we help ourselves through the change process? I think as Christians, what we have is a deeper relationship with God, a God who goes right to the very core of us and sees our shame and doesn't reject us.
Still loves us.
Still loves us. And so that is an opportunity for growth. When you've got a relationship with God, it's just like any other relationship, there's a two-way part here. You need to be able to take time, you have difficult conversations and a readiness to expose your vulnerability to God. Mm. So to help ourselves through the change process, and accept things as they are, there's a couple of tips.
Okay, give me some tips.
You can practice acceptance. Acceptance comes in a little bit of a very easy mantra to have. You can say, this is something that's happening. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just how it is.
Okay.
And when you say that little mantra, it's not good, it's not bad, you start to say, well, okay, now what am I going to do with it? You jump from that place rather than resist it or try and fight it. It's not good. It's not bad. Praying and letting things go rather than fighting the process. Hey, God, this is happening. It's not good. It's not bad. This is what's happening. Mm. And journaling. When you journal or write things down and have a discussion in your head about what you think is good and what you think is bad, you can then say, oh, it's not good. It's not bad. It's just how it is. It's a nice mantra.
Yes.
You can also measure your process of change. So when you've actually going through change, you can measure how you're coping. Naughties, you're not coping very well and you're resisting and you're denying and you're doing all the things that you shouldn't be doing. And 10 is you're managing change the best way you think you should. So start measuring how much better you are at coping with the change rather than measuring whether the change has happened or not.
Okay.
So the other one is just to set a goal. on how you would like to see yourself cope with change in the future.
And see where that takes you.
And see where that takes you.
Oh, I think this is very interesting. I never stop approaching Mondays differently after speaking with you. I really mean that. Next week, the process of change. Give us a quick preview of that.
Yes, there's a process of, there are many processes of change that people outline, but what I'm going to go through is a bit like the stages of motivation for us to make changes. When we know change is imminent, the sort of things that we do in order to make those decisions. I'm going to go through a number of those stages.
Okay, look forward to it.
And the other thing I'd like to go through is looking at how, if you're going to go and see a therapist, what sort of therapist you will need in order to manage your change.
I'd be really interested to hear that. As always, Lynn Worsley, thank you so much indeed for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.